All right.
Yep.
Den er kjempegøy. Den starter med Wordfill. Det, da får dere på en måte hele helstegsprosess.
Ja, you're on.
I'm on. I'm on. Alright, let's continue. So, alright, we have just defined the decompression routine, blah, blah, blah. We have a create file routine. We have some heap allocated stuff, v3, so final uncompressed size, blah, blah, blah. Create file, blah, blah, blah. All right, this one, we have to do that. Struct numbers of byte written. v3 is here apparently some sort of structure. 16. Oh, there's so many of these. It's all in locals. They open in new tab every time because they only show you a snapshot in time. So they do not update as you update the... as you go through the code. Same with the seed of use. That's a lot of them. Let's just remove that one. Remove that one. That one. And we go to the structures again. 16, 24, blah blah blah. Let's see. Apparently this is a structure with a file name in it. 24, 24. So you can guess at this point, you could probably guess that this structure is this one or this one, the structure 4. Let's try that. No problem, I like interruptions. Alright, so this can be pretty icky to see what kind of structure this is. So heap allocated stuff, plus something, plus 4, plus number of bytes written. So you have to find out which structure this is at some point. Start the blah blah blah, 16 again. So this is apparently the same structure as the previous one. Struct 4. Is it 4 or is it 2? It's 2. Right. To not care too much about that, we can simply just finish this one and go to here. We also put a stop there to be sure. Right, so we go into here now. We have one of those. We do see the heap allocated stuff. Let's go check out the locals again. Always check out the locals. System 32, no interesting there. Allocated stuff is the interesting one. Total length. This one. Allocated stuff. Jump 2. Some offset, which is its on. It's offset to here. Which is offset to here. Which apparently is mset offset. So at some point, this is an mset file. Now we know that this one is probably a pointer to an mset file. Let's try to do that. Image DOS header. know if that one changes anything, but E magic, no, so that is not it, but let's remove that again. Let's go into the where did I go? Why didn't I go into the function? Let's go into that function. Right. So you can check what is at this heap allocated stuff. V3. 6, 3, blah blah blah. V3, locals. V3. Jump to. That is an offset to an offset to an mset file. Alright. That is that. Image DOS header. So. It was two offsets, weren't it? It's kind of weird. Decompressed, max alloc, compressed, blah blah blah, RTF, blah blah blah. Compress the buffer. We have all these names. Char star, no. It was V char star. Sometimes it doesn't tell you what it is. Let's see if it's a char. RTN compression workspace size. Oh, yeah, we just did this. Alright. Go through it. Check this function to see what all the arguments mean, especially when you see numbers like this. It's very interesting to see what they mean. Sometimes they are like this compression format. Alright, so we can press the M to find the enum compression format. It's not in here. When it's not in here, you should really add some more enums. I don't remember where at the moment. Let's see. Enumeration. Insert a new enum by name. Let's see if I can find any compression here. If I can't find it, I have to put it in later. Alright, so it's not that important at this moment, but it would be nice to know if this is a default format LZNT or Express. So what I can do is press enumerate. Very large number. Oh, sorry. Oh, anyway, it doesn't matter that much. Let's just decompress everything here. It's not that interesting function. Right, we went into the function here. This is not very good way of teaching it, but disable items, startup items, word resiliency, and word resiliency. So this is a lot of reg keys. Here we can see that wrong strange function and noticed at some point. The query system information. This one should be interesting to see what is. For is again this structure, the heap allocated stuff. I really wish I did identify this one before I came here so I could show you what went into this one, but I have not done and I do not have the time to do that. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna put breakpoints in those functions there. Breakpoint on that function. They can breakpoint on this function and this function. And of course here. Is v5 is 0, so that is just a counter. I usually call my counters for I, but it's nice to do. This one is really annoying me at the moment, this heap allocated plus 4. You should really try to find it. You can't really express these virtual pointers, so you should really try to find out where they do things, but alright, so if you ran it there, we would just get a finish, and that's not what we want to do. This is kind of silly. I'm sorry I didn't get the time to prepare this bit. Look at those, the file names, the F7, the compression, control F7. Now I should go into here. We should come into here now. Yep, we are here. Number 0 is smaller than blah blah blah. We are to create the file, which is at blah 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 plus 16. You can look at blah 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 then. Locals. What's it called again? It's called V3 plus 16. Let's create D words here. Right, so here we see the structure which is here. So at least there are 5 D words, and we have the 6. So when we do that for the structure, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, let's create that structure. 6, at least 6 of DDs go into here. Pseudocode, this one struct 5. Field 10. Yep, field 10 is a file name. So as you see, this is very... It can take some time, but you have to try and fail a few times sometimes to do this. Field 8. It's kind of strange though, because the file name is here, which is on the same space as the app data, so it's not the same structure, but it's very similar. The reason why I keep adding DDs is because I see this one, so I know it's too small. If I add 2 more DDs, for instance, which means it could be this structure for all I know. Right, so 24. File name blah blah blah. So now we know that this structure is the size of OX28, so it is its own structure because it's not this one. If it were this one, the file name would be here instead. Write file, field 0, field 8. I have to check the write file again to see what the write file do. First one is the H file. The second one is the LP buffer, which is the pointer of the data to be written to the device. So we know that this is a very interesting structure. This one is the number of bytes to write. Right, so this is a very interesting structure then. So then we know the structure at the heap allocated stuff plus 4 is very interesting. And let's put that structure here, that file name here, get environment variable, blah blah blah. Have a decoder. This one could be interesting, but I do not find it very interesting at the moment. But what would be interesting would be to see what it does do in other places. Like for instance in, if it's here, no, yes, there it is, structure 5, field 14, this 18, string blah blah blah, so it's some sort of string. This is basically the way you enumerate and fill up these structures. As you do it, more and more things will show itself. Just fix that one as well. I'm not going to fix the prototype of that one because you've seen how to fix prototypes. So this one is some string. Blah blah blah. Let's see if this one is used in this more near the place. Nope. It's not. Do we have it here? Yes, there we had a heap allocated plus 4 thing. Let's do struct 5. Great process. Let's see what these different arguments here do. Is it command line? It's probably not that one because you have an A2 here, which is a integer. Yeah, had one function, I've lost it now, which had the heap allocated stuff. Struct 5, the LP buffer. So right, so this, as you can see, this is the function that decodes the information that is going to be inside the two files. So A1 is probably the filer, so when A2 here is 0 or 1, you have the DLL file you saw when you dynamic run it, and when it's plus 1 that, you have the bulletin.doc. So decompress payload and the new bulletin.doc. I haven't looked at that one because I haven't been interested in it, but it's probably not the original document because then you would have like a document containing more code than itself somewhere. That would be a very good compression routine, so it's probably a benign version of it to use as a decoy. So we know that this now is a decompress payload and decoy, and here we have functions to write them to file. What would be interesting if we go into this one, if it does not write it to file, we could always check the LP buffer. Let's try to get in here. Let's see where we are. Go to, press the G button, EIP. So at the moment, we probably are here. The LP, V3 LP buffer. Let's see. V3 LP buffer. Jump 2. So at this buffer, we probably have the contents of the MZ file itself. So we can open that in. Let's see the hex stump, for instance. Let's see, and we go to, like to have that. Let's put that on the side, put it on the right here. Right, so this offset, let's go to that offset here. We see the MZ file. Very easy way, very lazy way of things. You could pass the entire header or check the size to see how big it is, but you could also just do like this, copy a lot of data for no reason, see if that is enough, save to file, test file. Yes. Look at the file. Let's see, test dot. Let's call it DLL for fun. CF Explorer. It's not an executable, this one at least. Let's see what it might be. Binary file. The reason here is didn't start with mset, so we copied a lot of bytes. So we go into it, we open it in a hex editor. This is just one of the ways of doing it. A more neat way would be, of course, to pass the header and create the file perfect. But this way, now we have the mset header start. If we open it now in the CFS Explorer, we see the file size is much, much bigger, so I can remove loads of bytes here, because the file is 32.5 kilobytes itself. Let's open that one. And bam, here we go. This is a file which should resemble the... Let's see if it dropped it, if I run the file. Which folder was it in again? Start DLL, let's see if I dropped it. There we go, the local 32.5. So if I check the MD5 of the dropped file, 87B22, and the MD5 of this file would be way different because it's much, much bigger. But if I then opened apt-data local, not roaming but local, here it is. If I opened that in IDA, you would see that rather immediately, you would see that this is the same file as the other one. So here is the malware itself. This is the X-Agent Lite malware, which is a downloader. It profiles. It is pretty cool. I recommend you to take a look at it if you have the Hexrace decompiler. It is a good exercise to do then. It has a couple of neat tricks, like the decoding part of it is recursive. So the decryption routine is a recursive decryption routine. That is one way of using IDA to find that one statically and dynamically in here. You could, of course, do everything manually statically in the non-debugger mode, but that would take a lot longer because you have to run or script all the APIs yourself and run them. You could, of course, then we were interested in, let's see, continue. No, we're not interested in that. Let's run that function. Let's see now. We are fine with that. Close the handle. Blah, blah, blah. Number is blah, blah. And so the next time this went around now, we would decode the decoy document. So let's do that. We go into this one. It didn't run for some reason, so maybe there's something wrong in there, or maybe something different. But that is not something important at the moment. So now you've seen how to the most easy way of extracting the file from the memory of the malware in IDA. So, was there anything else I wanted to show them? It was writing the Yara. We have shown them virtual pointers. You did get the virtual pointer thing, did you? Hopefully you got it. If not, you should try to do it, but it is one of the most important things while analyzing malware in IDA. You want to see a sample report, of course. Important things to have in a report. But first, we take the Yara rule. So the reason you want a Yara rule would be to give the Yara rule to a sysadmin so we can search the network for any files that match the Yara rule. Let's say to find if some hosts are compromised or not, or infected. Especially when you have malware like this that stores itself as a file, that would be very nice, because it can search the entire file system for you pretty easy and find the file. Other than that, you can have it on systems like VirusTotal or Hybrid Analysis or other malware repositories. Can help you discover new files, or when people get a mail and upload their files, they might just trigger on your signature and you might be able to get new files that way. So one of the best ways of writing YARA rules is to identify the most important or unique parts of the code. For this one, it would be pretty simple to start around this one. It counts backwards. So then you have to look at the assembly view, no matter if you have hex rays or not. So what you have to do then is make sure you don't need a stack pointer for that, but make sure you have the opcodes shown in front of the mnemonics. So 8 opcodes are usually fine. Press OK on that. A few times you have more, but that is it's often just lots of zeros, but you'd have to know how many. So, for instance, on this one, I would try to write a YARA rule on, let's say, this part right here. It's fine. The decrementing here. Or perhaps this one. All right. So let's try to write a YARA rule on this one. That should detect it. That's it. YARA rule start. Yep. If they write their code pretty similarly, yes. That is often how you find new malware, is that they use a lot of these same functions or very similar functions. So you do not try to write a YARA so specific that it only catches this malware. You wanted to see the family that resembles it. So the YARA rule now is probably going to see the one I'm writing on this one would probably see all of the droppers of this kind. I did write one for this assignment. I did see at least 3 people here upload them to VirusTotal. So that's pretty cool. Let's see if I can check that out. No, I don't want to do that on a screen when it's videotaped. All right, VG. Let's call it just VG for some reason. A YARA rule should have, you can have meta fields, such as information about the author or date or whatever. But I usually just do strings. It's called A1. Strings, it doesn't necessarily mean strings, it just means data. So you can have arrays here, you can have nibbles. You know that nibble is a half byte, so you can search for half bytes. It can be pretty handy when you have like mnemonics that are different, but you only have half bytes differs between them. Conditions, any logic with the variables you create, you can create here, typical math or modules, etc. So let's try this one. So, right, so for instance here, let's try to write a simple YARA rule. So we have an 8A. I recommend often to use a tool or learn assembly good enough that you can know which character you or which bytes you want to make wildcards, because you can do like this to create wildcards, or you can do like this to create a number of wildcards. Let's, for instance, try this one. So a 2. So what I do now, I look at the bytecode here. 32, 44, 39, FF is pretty uninteresting. No, it's not uninteresting, because it means the minus 1, which is nice. So I can do like that, because the location could probably be different at some point. So I do like that, FF, 32, 04, and again, those, oh bloody, and the decrementation of EDI. So what happens now is This one is very specific, so it will require these to be put in these registers. So you could make them register independent by adding more wildcards. I suppose this one would help a lot. Typically you want to make other names here, like key, if you have a specific XOR key that is used, you can add that in here and look for that same particular XOR key. If you have encoded areas, like you know that system32 was encoded, take the byte values of the encoded part of that and look for that. Maybe you have that in some other file that is not the same, but they use the same crypto algorithm on it. So that would be good. Just one is not too awesome. Let's see, it also had an XOR. That one is too short, so this one is not good. So you probably do not want that one, but you can do 8A00. So this is just one quickly written. You require all of them. When it comes to condition, you could write like that, A1 is bigger or less than 2, which means that this would have to occur at least 2 times or more in the same file for it to trigger. Or you could just do like A1 and or A2, etc. But in this one I just try A1 to do it simple. Yara Dutch, I can call it VG again. Chiara. Yep.
So you don't want it too specific or too general?
No.
So that's the balance. And the key, maybe you can repeat this question for the room, but the key, how common is it for them to change the, if you have a fixed key, how often common is it to change the fixed key between samples?
All right, so he asked how common it is to change the keys between samples. So if you look for a specific key, they do it quite often. It's not every time, but in newer campaigns they tend to change it all the time and have different keys or negotiate the keys directly with the C2 in the downloader itself to create a key, so you have to intercept it. But in some cases, they use the same key or the same encoded bit for quite a while, so you can find it. A few years ago, there was a malware from the same actor as this one that had, for several years, these remnants of the same encoded bytes of this couple of old C2 domains that the malware didn't use itself, but they had forgotten to write over that data, even though it's not used anymore. So I had a signature on that one and can see the malware just because of they left the remnants in there. So it could be good. So if we were to look for a key here, you could probably just go here. All right, we have these. Could write a signature on those. Let's see. We have a key here. B1, I call this one then. And you could, of course, write a string. It's fully allowed to write, like, Lisa is in here, if that string was in the malware. If it were Unicode, you have to write wide. If it's ASCII, no need to write anything. Right. This would probably not register on the malware it dropped, because that would have a different algorithm. That one is pretty nice. I want to show you, but I really don't want to show you the rules we use on different malware. But so this is a simple one. Let's see. Syntax error, empty string. Why is there syntax error? Something I've written wrongly? I always forget how to write proper rules or how to write them like they should be written. Strings condition, blah 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 blah. I don't see any reason for this to be wrong. Do you see any reason for this to be wrong? Why the syntax error? I'm blind at the moment.
Need a space after VG?
No, it shouldn't need a space after VG. Right.
I don't understand the rule, but
Yes. It says rule. Right, I have to check the one I've written already then. I just have to do that while I'm checking this. Sorry about that one. Blah 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 blah. There's nothing wrong in it. Kind of weird, isn't it, that this didn't work? Right, I can take this. Oh, no, 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 no. Let's copy that. Go out of this one. This one is okay for me to show, because I'm okay by showing this one. I think it's a bit outdated anyway. So, as you see, rule blah blah blah, it has a name, blah blah blah, meta, strings. I know why this one got cut like this, like that, and like that. And bam, it should be nice again. So, rule, some rule, author description, strings, blah blah blah. A1. There's no difference between these, are there? Fine, let's just do that. This is definitely the demo ghost coming for some reason. Right, all of them, or no, all of A star or B1. That is the condition we want. And the rule name was VG, condition strings, blah blah blah. That should be fine. I don't know why it doesn't work. Oh, because I'm writing pi. Oh my god, that's newbie. I didn't open the right file. Oh my god.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Listen, we need to make a decision because now there's 4 minutes until the break.
All right.
And there's 15 minutes until the recording stops. I can start another recording so you can show the report at 4:15.
No, I think we'll do the report pretty quickly. So we will show the report and then when it stops we will do the thingy. I suppose they can take the break after the report.
We can push them for 10 minutes.
Yeah, we can push you guys for 10 minutes.
But the recording will stop in 15 minutes.
Yeah, so we will do that before the recording stops. It's very quickly. As you see now, we're searching. I'm searching the entire system for with that signature to see if I find some other files with it. I always do that when I write a Yara signature. I always search through the entire system I have to see if I get any Windows false positives. The error scanning you should just ignore, because that is files you're not allowed to open. What I should have done, I should have piped this out to a text file, because then you will only get the correct files listed in that text file. So writing a YARA rule is crucial. It's one of the must-have things in a report. So, yeah. He asked if this he thinks that using these YARA rules seems time consuming, and he wonders how to use them in the most efficient way. Antiviral engines tend to use YARA rules as well. You want them in a monitor state, so you monitor new files with the YARA rule. If you are hunting already, if you have like created a new YARA rule because you have an incident or something and you want to search through a network for compromises or infections, you would search through all files, and it will be time consuming because that's just the nature of what it's doing. But number one, have it in a monitor system. Otherwise, you have to search through everything, and sometimes you have to search through everything with them anyway. So, out of luck. They are pretty fast though, because, well, you see, I have a lot of error opening files at the moment. That's pretty sad. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna cancel that one. I'm gonna pipe it out to a file and show you the report thing while I pipe it out to a right, so not C there. Let's see, just out.txt on the. It needs admin rights through. It is administrator, so I don't know why it didn't let me to write it to C, to root. Anyway, when it comes to a report, is there any questions about this before I go to the report? I've been talking a little bit about everything, but not that much about anything. But when it comes to a report, I'm not going to show you the test template. I'm going to show you the MD file. All right. So Markdown is pretty simple language. It's not like Latish or something like that. It does not support mathematics in the same way, but it's much, much, much faster and easier to write, and you have converters to Latish. So when I create PDF files from this, it is through Latish code, so it looks pretty. It supports HTML as well in the middle of this coding. Markdown has simply different sizes based on how many spaces you want to. Very simple for building and creating file. So that's going to do work. Let's see. Right. So typically a report, you would want some nice graphics to make it look pleasing to the eye in the beginning. First thing you want at the top, you don't see that here, but it's very important. Well, you have a front page, and on the second page, you have one thing and one thing alone, and that is the executive summary, which basically means this malware, it has these capabilities, the possible bad things that could happen with your system, or if you get infected with it. Basically, It is aimed for anybody non-technical to read it, so they want to know what kind of harm can it do, what kind of can it exfiltrate information, will it ruin things on the system, is it easy to protect yourself against, or is it very stealthy? All the kind of things that you can talk about that are non-technical should be written in a short executive summary. So people on a strategic level could just read it, okay, this could be bad, or this is okay for us. This risk is something we don't care much about. Because we are not risk assessment people, we are only reverse engineers or students or whatever. First thing I like to have is a threat actor overview. You should not have that, because you probably do not have that. If you have that, fine, you can find a lot on this threat actor on the interweb. So that would be cool if you add it into a report, but as it is now its own field to deal with. Delivery method, this one is interesting. So if you know how the method has been delivered to the recipient, this one should be entered, because it allows the strategic department or the risk analysts or the administrators to decide if this way this delivery method should be prohibited, or if they have any countermeasures they could use to counter it. So if you know the delivery method, always have that in. Very nice. Malware capabilities, these are summaries in the beginning. Malware capabilities, such as does it encrypt files, does it exfiltrate data, does it download stuff, can it execute other files, can it escalate privileges. Try to think as many of those as possible. If there's something unique that, or something good that you expected to have that it didn't have, that would also be nice to write, actually. Like, it is not capable of running other malware, it's only capable of downloading. That would be interesting. It can escalate to administrative rights. That is very interesting. And after writing that, a short text on the purpose of the malware. Like, what you think the purpose is. The purpose could be different, but for this malware, you saw that the purpose was dropping and running one file, because it had this shell execute open the file it dropped. It apparently had a other document that we didn't get time to go proper into, the bulletin doc, which probably was a decoy of the original bulletin doc. So try to think about the purpose, because people reading the those medium technical people that will be reading this summary part might be interesting in that. That is typical for threat analysts and such. And you have a summary. In the beginning here, you would have a summary. So every file we had. Let's see. Oh, that's stupid. Should have. So every file we had, like the test.dll, the it.dll. You should, if it has original name, you should document original name. The MD5, SHA-1, SHA-256. Pleasure with at least two of them different, because different reports include different. Some of them do not have the MD5, some do not have the SHA-1. So if you want to match them up with everything, you should at least have two of those. Let's see the out.txt. Right, so we found two files. We found the dropper copy and the it.dll by the Yara rule search. Okay, that's good. Should always write out the compilation date and the type. So typically you have like this. This is an evil document. The MD5 is that. It was compiled that. It helps the threat analyst again think of, yeah, find a make a timeline for it. This, the purpose of this is the injection module, and this is a downloader, blah, blah, blah. The how-to analysis, this one, this is something you should write. It's very, very important that you do write it at work. So if you get sick, or if you quit, or if you die, or if you get murdered, or if you... Anyway, some other people can take over your work, or they can... do what you do to see if they get the same results. So, but again, that should sometimes probably just be internal, because it will tell people about your capabilities and how the way you think, and Yeah, it's not everybody should know those things, especially if you work in the government or in protected areas such as weapons production or etc. Deep analysis part, that is like, did this malware use a cool technique to trick IDA into believing all the wrong prototypes? Did it ruin data? Did it use any exploits? Or did were there any bugs? What did the bugs cause? All the deep analysis part should be written in this one, but it should be omitted in a short version of the report. You should always write this short version before a long version of a report, because the short one is the one that people are really going to care to read. The deep one is mostly for yourself and for other malware researchers you want to... Well, in this field you have to cooperate a lot with people, and the way it works is very on persona basis. So you, to gather intelligence or information, you have to give something away. So you create a report, you can share this report and you get a report back and you learn that way. So that is the reason why deep analysis is very interesting. Cryptography analysis, that one would be very nice here, for instance. Then you would definitely go into here and you would document this function. You will create one of these that will be in the report, the decryption routine, very important. And you would talk about the two files that it decompresses, that in this one it decompresses us with the RTL decompression buffer, blah blah blah, create the files, starts the processes of them, is here, starts the DLL process. This part is pretty much important here. Omit when not applicable. This one is very rarely not applicable, but almost always. This means almost always. Conclusion and discussion. This is the subjective part, except from the summary of purpose. I think it died. No, didn't die. Almost. This is subjective, so you should discuss and make your own conclusions based on the findings. So everybody else could read your findings and make other conclusions or discussions around it, but these should be yours, and they will get better the more and more malware you see. Yara rule, add that when you can. It's very awesome to have that suricata. It's an equivalent to snort. So suricata or snort rules. If you see any network traffic in, and you can use output from Wireshark, or often see the structure of the type of data being sent on the network. You really want to make a rule for that. And last but not least, everything that you have written in the report, like if you have a C2 address, if you have a key, or if you that is crypto key or any other key, every document, MD5 sum, all of that information should also be included at the bottom, so that the people who does not read anything at all can go jump to the bottom of the report, read the indicators, and search for them on the systems. And that way, that is why you should, when this particular malware has like 12 different keys like this, you should extract all of them and put them into a Yara rule, or just keep them as is and give them put them in the indicators of compromise as well, with the file name, where it is stored, and all that. In the file that it drops, it has a C2 address. If you look at that C2 address, you could also put that in this one, because, well, then you know that it has gone to the next step. But always everything in here, even though it's up here. Is there anything you miss from the report?
We'll talk about that. I think it's at least it's an okay template. So I'll come up and round this up if we have 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Are you all done?
Yeah, I'm pretty much done.
Any questions?
No? All right.
Yes, you can do that. Not all plugins allow it, but you have different Yara plugins that let you do. You have the PE plugin, which lets you do those kind of things. You can do the hash of the, for instance, the text segment or the code segment or the data or the resource data segment. Yeah, it would make it very specific, but in some cases you would have the text segment could be the same one, but the data segment that is decoded could be different. So in those cases that could help you, or you could have some, could make your own plugin, perhaps use some sort of hashing algorithm that only takes partitions of the resources or segments.
I need to stop there because there's 1 minute until the recording stops, and I need to say a few things about the assignment too. First of all, thank you
for
two very nice workshops, and I hope we'll hope the students give us some feedbacks by the end of the semester to see how what they thought. I'm very happy. Now I'm going to hand out the assignment too. It's as soon as can. We need to talk a little bit and make a decision about how difficult we're going to make it. And also, we'll see if Kata can provide this template. Then I'm probably going to ask you to follow that template this time. Last time I didn't give you any guidelines. But I will post everything for assignment 2 on Blackboard as soon as we made the decision. So. Long day, but thank you, and
thank
we'll stop there. All right, thanks.